Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Grosse Pointe Woods, Michigan, and earned a Bachelor of Business Administration with majors in marketing and music from the University of Notre Dame and a Master of Music from New England Conservatory. An original member of the Michigan Opera Theater Studio, she is rapidly becoming one of America's top soprano opera singers. Her premier performance at the Toledo Opera in 2017 was as Susanna in The Marriage of Figaro. Her name, Angela Tice. And we're honored to have her as a guest. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible. And tonight our guest is one of America's top soprano opera singers, the incomparable Angela Tice. Angela, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack. I'm honored to be here.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please?
Yes. I was born outside of Chicago, but both of my parents are from Grosse Pointe. They met here in Grosse Pointe, and we moved from Chicago to Wisconsin when I was young, and then when I was in third grade, we moved to Grosse Pointe, back home with all the extended family, my grandparents, and growing up here has been such a joy. I always say that Michigan's my home, Detroit's my home, even though I was born out of state. But I have great memories of growing up and singing with my cousins and performing and watching The Sound of Music. And music was just part of my life. It was part of going to church. It was part of school, singing solos. And it was a hobby. It was a passion of mine.
What's the biggest thing you learned from Dad, Angela, and what's the biggest thing you learned from Mom?
My dad was a baseball player. He played in college, and he was a pitcher. And so he always would, and still does, give me baseball analogies. Be the ball. And he really emphasizes consistency and confidence. But He loves saying, have a major league day. And as a gift he gave me when I was in college at Notre Dame, it says, instead of play like a champion today, that all the players at Notre Dame hit as they go into the stadium, he says, he had written on it, perform like a champion today. So all of those sports analogies helping me to perform at my best, to be the ball. And the biggest thing I learned from my mom is to always be sweet. She is a saint of a woman and my role model and best friend. And she really emphasized the character that is necessary, no matter what business you're in, what field you're in, but to have your heart in the right place.
Angela, how do you explain the magic, the universality of music?
Well, music touches the soul in a way that words cannot. And Huxley has quoted that. I'm not going to quote it exactly, but music can communicate things that words cannot, that even silence cannot. And I experienced that firsthand as an audience member growing up and watching The Sound of Music, or when I studied abroad, being in that concert hall or that opera house, and even taking voice lessons, feeling the power of music, how it can communicate things that really just words alone cannot. Because opera especially, it has such a range of emotion. You can really utilize a huge range of your voice. You have an orchestra, you have scenery, you have so much visually as well. So music in the form of opera is what I think the most powerful form of the arts.
You got two majors, marketing and music, from the University of Notre Dame. And they say, you don't graduate from Notre Dame, you become Notre Dame.
Oh.
You know, you're a domer for life.
Yes.
There's only 8,000 undergrads. What makes that place so special?
It was the best 4 years of my life, I have to say that. I worked really hard to get there, and I savored every moment of it. In fact, I was on the waiting list to get in, and my older sister had been there, attended there, and I saw what a special place it was, mostly because of the values, the ethics. I had a business ethics class. Ethics really permeated most of my classes, and the standard of excellence, but also the care that is expected that you give to the world, to the community in which you live. So it wasn't just striving for greatness, but it was striving with greatness with God and to serve God's people.
When and how did you discover opera?
While I was a student at Notre Dame, I was taking voice lessons, and I decided, oh, I guess I'll be a voice major because I'm going to be in the choir and I want to take voice lessons, so I guess all those credits should make use of themselves. So I took voice lessons with a teacher, Georgine Rezik, who had a wonderful career in Europe and America, too. And she really inspired me. She really cared about each one of her students and wanted us to take ownership of the songs that we chose and the arias that we chose to sing, arias being a solo in an opera. And during my junior year, I wanted to study abroad in Italy. It was a dream of mine. My grandparents are Italian, and she didn't want me to go, Georgine, my teacher. She said, you're going to get behind in your vocal studies. It won't be a good decision. But I had an economics professor, David Ruccio, who said, who really encouraged me to go. He was also Italian, so that helped. But he said, just apply, see what happens. So I applied against my voice teacher's wishes, and my parents weren't too excited about it either. Got into the Rome program at Notre Dame, and then I happened to find a voice teacher in Rome through the connections at the school that we were going to be studying at. And before I left, my voice teacher, Georgine, gave me her blessing and said, you know what, this is going to be the perfect thing for you. She said, you're half German, you're half Italian. You really take ownership on your German side. You're stubborn, you're persistent, you're a hard worker, you're organized. But I think you could learn a lot from the Italian side. Live and breathe the music, the food, the culture, and discover that passion. And so it was in Rome where I really fell in love with opera.
Speaking of living and breathing the music, here's Angela performing The Prayer. Welcome back to Anything's Possible. I'm Jack Krasula, and we're with Angela Theis, a.k.a. the voice of an angel.
Oh, thank you.
Not always an angel, but the voice of an angel. Okay, let's go back 5 years ago. Hard to believe. February 2nd, 2014. It was Super Bowl 48. Seattle beat Denver 43-8. But that day, Angela, you got a phone call that changed your life.
I did.
What happened?
David DeKira, who recently passed away, founder of the Michigan Opera Theater, gave me a call and told me that they were starting at Michigan Opera Theater a training program for emerging international opera singers, and he wanted me to audition for the soprano spot. It was going to be a program that gave training on a very high level for five singers and a pianist, and the singers would be selected from all over the country through auditions, and it was going to be a 1 to 2 year program here in Detroit, my hometown, at my hometown opera house, with benefits and really a full-time job singing. It was still considered a training program. We called it the studio program because it was going to bridge the gap between the years of training and the years of performing full-time. And it exists, this kind of program, at other companies, other opera companies around the world, and Michigan Opera Theater didn't have a program quite like that yet. So Dr. D, as he was belovedly called, asked me to audition for the spot, and that was a great day to get the call from him. And I had previously sung at Michigan Opera Theater in small parts as an apprentice, and so he knew me and really invited me to audition for this position.
Arguably, he was the man, the pioneer, the first person to really start the rebirth of downtown Detroit. Before the Ilitch family and everything, you said he was beloved. We all loved him. What made him so special?
The way he cared about everybody he met, no matter if it was a janitor or just someone, a little kid who attended a performance, to the greatest opera stars that came in, Pavarotti, Joan Sutherland. And he treated everybody like they were the most important person that he's ever met, and gave them this sense of a family, like the Notre Dame family, if anybody knows what that's like, to make you feel so loved and that you were the only one that could do this. And he would invite people to parties and say, oh, you have to bring this dish. And we couldn't have it without it. And just make people feel so loved. And he believed in everybody and believed in the talents, and not just the talents, but what was behind it, the heart.
Tell us about the treasure we have in the Michigan Opera Theater.
Wow. Well, my grandfather used to attend movies in that opera house. It wasn't an opera house then. It was a vaudeville theater and a movie house. And when David DeKira had the crazy idea to buy it, it was dilapidated and water and just a terrible, terrible sight. People thought he was crazy, but he saw that that was going to be a really important center in Detroit on Broadway and Madison. And he made it happen. He brought Luciano Pavarotti in to open the house and then really revitalize that area. I mean, soon after, you have Comerica Park coming in, and so many other organizations then afterwards soon followed.
All right. You had another tremendous experience and a blessing from God. In 2017, you get a call from the Toledo Opera, and they want you to perform Susanna in The Marriage of Figaro.
You make it sound like that. I just get calls and then I automatically get it. Doesn't work that way, but I do appreciate the drama of that. But like I had said, with David DeKira's call, I still had to audition, so I still had to work for it. And for this particular job in Toledo, I went and I auditioned. I was in the middle of performances, or rehearsals rather, for The Tenderland through Michigan Opera Theater here in the Detroit area. And I finished the dress rehearsal, and a colleague and I drove down to Toledo, and we had an audition. The conductor wasn't even there. They had three other people there hearing the audition, and the conductor was via Skype on the computer video. So he heard my audition virtually, and then I knew what I was auditioning for. It was a dream role of mine. Susanna is a feisty, smart character in Mozart's opera, The Marriage of Figaro, Le Nozze di Figaro. And I guess I did well. I got the part, and it was a dream come true. It's the largest role in the repertoire. It's very long. She sings a lot. She's always on stage. Very rarely is she off with maybe a quick costume change, but she really runs the show. It should be called The Marriage of Susanna, but everyone knows Figaro, so...
I have a confession to make.
Yes.
We're actually not recording yet. Mark Blackwell, our producer, wanted to audition and see if you could really be worthy of the show. Just joking. All right, let's go. Here's Angela performing Time to Say Goodbye. Was Angela Tice, Time to Say Goodbye. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasula. We're with Angela Tice, an original member of the Michigan Opera Theater Studio. Let's go back to 2007. You studied in Rome during the spring semester. What was that like?
Life-changing. I found a voice teacher who was 76 years old at the time and had a successful career. He and his wife were both opera singers. And I would go to his studio every week for a voice lesson. And the studio itself was just picturesque. Red velvet curtains and pictures of him in roles on the wall, and you know, scores of operas, the piano, it just beautiful tapestry, a couch. I mean, it was just out of a movie. And we spoke in Italian, and he wanted to work solely on Italian music. He wanted me to discover the true communicative power of opera and how powerful it is. So we sang Puccini, Donizetti, but mostly Puccini. He was a big Puccini fan, and if anybody knows a Puccini opera, La Bohème, for example, they know the power of the theater, the power of the drama. Giacomo Puccini was an Italian composer, and he just was writing film scores before, you know, film scores really even existed, and the drama that he put on the stage with the music communicated things so powerful. So he would... my teacher, maestro, I had to call him, master, he would teach me through demonstration. So he would sing a phrase, and then I would sing a phrase. And to see his eyes and his heart and his whole body just light up with emotion was contagious. And I was like, this is amazing. His whole body's involved. I'm like, I guess that's what opera is. You have to use your whole body and your breath support, and there was no halfway doing anything. You had to be fully committed to the singing.
9 years later, January 2016, you're back in Rome,
mm-hmm.
and you performed at St. Peter's in the Vatican.
I did. And when I was a student in Rome, I would cross St. Peter's Square every morning on my way, and it was a dream of mine to perform, to not really perform, I guess, to sing at the Vatican. I would attend Mass there as a student in 2007, and in fact, when I went to grad school at New England Conservatory, we were asked to write down our goals on an index card during the orientation weekend, and I wrote down to sing at the Vatican. Well, as you said, fast forward, 2016, I was able to go with the Archdiocese of Detroit Chorus, and we as a choir were able to sing before the Mass of Epiphany on January 6th, and we performed, sang a few songs, and then we were able to join in singing with the Sistine Chapel Choir throughout the whole Mass, and I had the spot front row behind the Pope, behind the altar, so it was an incredibly peaceful, peace-filled experience to see Pope Francis processing in his white, and to hear him preach in Italian about the glory of God, the Epiphany, the star, and how we're the glory of God. He delights in us. And the fact that I was able to sing in this blessed, blessed place was a real honor, and to do that with the Archdiocese Choir.
Angela, you have a 3-year-old nephew, Henry.
Yes.
When you're with him, what song do you sing?
Well, when he was born, I was actually in Rome. His due date was the day we were singing at the Vatican, January 6th. He wasn't born until 2 days later, but I was still in Rome. So I have this Italian connection with him. He loves flags, and he loves the Italian flag, and he loves Italian music. So he really took a liking to the Neapolitan song, Funiculi Funicula. So I dance with him. I hold him and I dance with him, and we pull up a YouTube video of Pavarotti singing, and he sings along too. He loves it. So yamma yamma coppo yamma 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 coppo yamma funiculi funicula funiculi funicula yamma yakuma funiculi funicula.
Angela, that's easy for you to sing. All right. A great opera singer. How do you know it when you hear it? What do they have in common?
The power to transport the audience member. You no longer, as an audience member, think about them as a singer. You are engaged in the story, and you are transported by the music. You feel their emotions, their heartbreaks, their loves, their tragedies. You feel it through their voice, and it just permeates you, your soul, and you cry or you laugh, and you're just in the moment. And a really great opera singer has that gift to do that.
Speaking of a really great opera singer, who are a few of the best sopranos today, and why?
Well, one of my favorites is Barbara Bonney, and she's an American who had a wonderful career in Europe, and I had the opportunity to study with her. I received a grant after my master's to study with her in Salzburg, and her recordings are really what introduced me to classical music. I remember listening as a freshman at Notre Dame to her voice, and I thought, oh, classical music is beautiful. And it was a Mozart piece. And to be able to study with her and to learn from her and to learn the roles that she learned was a great honor. She's one of my favorites. Freni, Mirella Freni, is an incredible, now past opera singer. And I'm proud to say, great friends who colleagues who are stars. Caitlin Lynch from this area, Jennifer Rowley, who was recently living here and now singing at the Met. Both Caitlin and Jennifer are singing at the Met. Incredible artists. Anna Netrebko is a big, big star. Renee Fleming I got to see here in Detroit. The list goes on.
And Angela Tice.
Oh, thank you.
All right. You get signed for a major role of a new opera that you've never performed before. The score can be 500 pages. Walk us through the process. What happens?
Oh, it is so intimidating at first. But my grandpa always says, how do you eat an elephant? Bite by bite, piece by piece. So I remember when I was cast in an opera here in Detroit called The Passenger, and it was an opera in many languages. Often an opera will just be in one language, and they'll have the subtitles or super titles for the audience. But this opera was about the Holocaust and the aftermath of the Holocaust. And so the composer wanted each of the characters to sing in their native tongue, or the character's native tongue. And so my character had to sing in French, but I also sang a little bit in Russian. And then the people I was communicating with on stage were singing all these other languages, Polish and German. And it was wild. It was so wild. So you kind of get the lay of the land first. You research the story, you look at the text first, because that's where the music comes from. It really starts at the text. So you translate, if you don't know the language fluently, you translate and you really get the language in your mouth, speaking it first. And then you go through and you learn the notes, you work with a pianist, a coach, to make sure you get all the right pitches and all the right rhythms, and you put it all together, and what do you got? You got an opera. You prepare all this on your own with a coach or with a voice teacher or both, and then you come together for rehearsal, and the rehearsal period's only about 2 or 3 weeks where you stage everything. You're all memorized, all your colleagues are memorized, and you stage it all.
And you end up with Angela Tice singing O Mia Babbino Caro by Puccini. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to one of America's top soprano opera singers, Angela Theis. Angela, it's obvious you're very down-to-earth, very humble, very Christ-centered. You're not a diva. How will you ever become a great soprano and very successful not being a diva?
Well, thank you for that. You know, it takes a lot of support. It takes a lot of people. It's not just you. It's not just, you know, all about one person. So all the divas that are out there, all the divos, they have such a big network of support. And I couldn't do it without everybody, without my family, without my musical support, and Dr. D, Richard Leach at Michigan Opera Theater, Wayne Brown. I mean, really, it takes a lot of people to believe in you. So I do it by the grace of God and with the help of so many people out there.
You've surrendered to God. You truly trust Him
mm-hmm.
at a very young age. How and why?
Well, it's the hardest thing to trust, right? And I learned in my singing and in my voice lessons that that's the only way, that you have to surrender, you have to trust. You can't control, because what you're doing, you can't even see what you're doing when you sing. Everything has to be released. Everything has to be surrendered. As singers, we're vessels, we're instruments, and I look at Mary, as we're in the Christmas season here. She was a humble Jewish lady, teenager, who loved God, and God chose her, and she, in her emptiness, in her humility, she was able to sing, to magnify God's name and to bring about Christ into the world. So this Christmas season, I've been really pondering that. You know, what does it take to be great? What does it take to do God's will? And it's a lot of that emptiness, to the humility. So it is a paradox. And how do I become a diva in this world? Well, I don't think it's by these world standards. And if I'm never to reach the greatest heights of, you know, Renee Fleming and these great artists, that's fine by me. Like, whatever God's plan is for me, that shall be.
Angela, there can be 30 to 70 musicians in the orchestra when you're singing. What do you hear when you sing?
It's not like like on a Charlie Brown, but it is a cloud of sound. It's that support. The difference between singing with a piano and singing with a full orchestra is incredible. You feel this support, this cloud of sound, like I said, and it's below you and kind of in front of you, all led by the conductor. And sometimes you hear instruments do their solo part if the composer wrote it in, a flute line or an oboe line or a violin line, and those can be your cues to come in, or they can be in duet with you. And it is just such a joy to be able to make music as a team with so many different instruments and the colors that come out. And we all work together and hopefully produce a beautiful sound.
You're looking out at a couple thousand people with all these lights coming at you, and it's dark out there. What do you see when you sing?
I like it better when it's dark and when I can't see. But if people are sitting up front, like my mom likes to do, then I can see some faces if they're really close. But usually it's just blurry, nondescript faces and mostly dark. And you have the lights that are on you and your colleagues on stage, and you see the conductor. That's where you check in. And there are also monitors, visual monitors, video screens, TV screens, sometimes in the house, so on like the balcony level, sometimes they'll have on the edges of each balcony a video screen, so you can see the conductor if the director wants you to be, you know, looking lovingly into the eyes of your colleague on stage. You can catch the video screen to see where the beat is.
I quote you now, you have to control the stage.
Oh, I said that. Oh, wow. Well, taking control of the stage is something that Susanna in The Marriage of Figaro really did and does. And this opera's been around for hundreds of years for a reason. And you have to really take ownership of the role and embody all the aspects of the character. And when you take control of the stage, you have that confidence. You have that assuredness that comes from all your hours of memorizing and practicing and having fun.
Angela Theis, thanks much for sharing your amazing and inspiring story. And we close this evening with Angela Theis performing Ave Maria. Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohom.